The Time of Your Life by William Saroyan, a new United Artists motion picture starring James Cagney and William Bendix, is the target for attack and defense on The Author Meets the Critics. Meet first the defense, one of the country's most widely read critics, movie editor of Newsweek magazine, Tom Wenning.
When the Academy Awards were passed around or will be passed around next year, a special Oscar should be presented to James and William Cagney for having the courage to bring William Saroyan's The Time of Your Life to the screen. As of the moment, however, the important thing is that the brothers have had the imagination and the skill to bring off a highly successful tour de force. As might have been expected, the adaptation remains more theater than cinema, but it is also unusual and unusually fine screen entertainment, alive and warm, alternately brash and sentimental, forgive me for that, and rich in humor.
Well, that's one man's opinion from the side of the experts. Here now in the other corner is no expert, just a movie fan, a man long associated with the voice of the people, presently an outstanding personality on WNBC in New York, Wally Butterworth.
I saw the movie The Time of Your Life. I sat through the theater when I wasn't asleep all evening. I thought it was dull, confusing. As a matter of fact, I still don't know what it's all about. Now, I respect Mr. Wenning's opinion as an editor of Newsweek magazine, but I should like to read to you the criticism of Mr. Brooks Atkinson of the New York Times on October the 26th, 1939, one day after my birthday. I resent anybody winning Pulitzer Prizes with a play like this on my birthday. Here's what he says. The Time of Your Life is only a reverie in a barroom. It's not much of a story. Nothing holds this sprawling drama together except Mr. Saroyan's affection for the tatterdemalions who are in it. What the characters do is hardly enough to fill a one-act play. And get a load of this, boys and girls. Saroyan is no magician and is not much interested in the technique of writing drama, but he has a dynamic imagination. Now, that's like the guy with a wonderful tenor voice. Everybody said he could sing. He was full of music. But it wouldn't come out.
Well, there you have the beginnings of a battle, which is fairly customary on these programs. And now meet the man who tries to keep the peace, your regular chairman, John K.M. McCaffrey.
Good afternoon, everyone. Obviously, the stage is set for a free-for-all on The Time of Your Life. We've heard one critic for and one critic against. Now, we've two other gentlemen with us who will want to have their say as well, and I'd like you to meet them briefly. We can perhaps best let them introduce themselves.
My name is John Gassner. I've written books on drama and film. Next to Eddie Dowling and George E. Nathan, I was the first person to read Saroyan's play. It took him 6 days to write it. I read it on a Saturday afternoon, May 13th, 1939. I was then play editor for the Theatre Guild. I was enthusiastic about the life, time of your life and warmly recommended it to the Theatre Guild. We did the play, and it won. Not only the Drama Critics Prize, but also the coveted award, the Pulitzer Prize. Mr. Butterworth dissenting, I presume.
No presumption necessary, Mr. Gassner. I vote no, both on the play and the movie.
And for the movie, Mr. Butterworth, we have our next guest.
My name is Paul Lazarus. I make what is laughingly called my living, trying to interest people in going to see United Artists films. I've been very closely associated with the picture, The Time of Your Life, and with the Cagneys, even before the picture went into production. Since Mr. Saroyan, the author, couldn't be here himself today, I'm here to pinch hit for him. And speaking of pinch hitting, I'm going to take a hit at Mr. Butterworth.
That's the spirit we like on this program, but before the fireworks begin...
Now, just a minute, John. I mean, where's my partner?
You need a partner?
Looks like I have three opponents. I thought this was going to be a nice, gentle foursome where I had a partner. As it is, I'm playing the three gentlemen's best ball.
Oh, no, you have a partner. Mr. Atkinson has come to your rescue already.
And if necessary, I will. I'll knock a few fly balls for you, Wally. Now, I think we'd like to give our listeners, now that the fireworks have already begun, to give our listeners some idea of what The Time of Your Life is all about. The scene of the play is a honky-tonk waterfront saloon in San Francisco. The main character in the play and in the movie is a man named Joe. That's all, just Joe. He's an eccentric, well-dressed man of about 40, and when we first meet him, he is seated alone at a table.
I'm Joe. The place I'm sitting in is called Nick's. Nick's Pacific Street Restaurant, Saloon, and Entertainment Palace, if you want to be formal about it. I've been coming here every afternoon for some time now, sitting in the same chair, drinking champagne. I like champagne. Helps me think. I have to do a lot of thinking. Hey, listen to that, eh? Well, that boy at the piano can really play, can't he? Yeah. Sure can. You know, it's almost always quiet here. Over in the corner sits the Arab. He sips beer all day and plays a harmonica. He doesn't say much. Most of the time he repeats the same phrase, no foundation all the way down the line. A friendly cop comes in once in a while and sounds off to Nick about his troubles. There's a girl named Kitty Duval. Says she was once in burlesque. Yeah, she comes in here, too. Sits at the bar and dreams. Well, Nick's is a good place for dreams. Oh, anyway, I want to tell you about a certain day when a tall, quietly dressed woman with big brown eyes and soft brown hair walked into Nick's and sat down at the table opposite mine. She ordered a beer and laid her purse on the table. The purse was initialed M.L., big gold letters. After Nick served her, I leaned over and smiled at her. And when she smiled back, I said, is it Madge Lobowitz?
Is what? What?
Is the name Mabel Leskew?
What name?
The name the initials M.L. stand for. The initials in your bag.
No.
Margie Longworthy.
No.
Midge Laurie? My initials are J.T.
John?
No. Martha Lancaster.
No. Joseph?
Yeah. That's my first name. Everybody calls me Joe. The last name is the tough one. I'll help you a little. I'm Irish. Is it just plain Mary?
Yes, it is. I'm Irish, too. At least on my father's side. English on my mother's side.
Oh, I'm Irish on both sides. You know, Mary is one of my favorite names. I guess that's why I didn't think of it. I met a girl in Mexico City once named Mary. She was an American from Philadelphia. She got married there. In Mexico City, I mean. While I was there. Yeah, that was very confusing because... Well, I was under the impression that we were in love. At least I was. You never know about anybody else. She was engaged to another man, you see, and... Well, her mother was with her, and... She went through with it. That must have been... 6, 7 years ago. She's probably got 3 or 4 children by now.
Are you still in love with her?
Oh, no, no. Well, I suppose I am. I thought I was going to marry her. Kept thinking all the time about the kind of kids we'd be likely to have. My favorite was the third one. Dumb and goofy looking. When she told me she was going to be married, I didn't feel so bad about the first two. It was that dumb one. You have children?
Yes, 2. Son and a daughter.
Ah, it's wonderful. They look like you?
Yes.
Why are you so sad?
I was always sad.
Who are you waiting for?
No one.
I'm not waiting for anyone either.
My husband, of course.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
He's a lawyer.
He's a great guy. I like him.
You have responsibilities?
One. And thousands. As a matter of fact, I feel responsible to everybody. At least everybody I meet. I've been trying for 3 years to find out if it's possible to live what I think is a civilized life. A life that can't hurt any other life.
Are you famous?
Very. Utterly unknown, but very famous. Would you like to dance?
All right.
Sorry, I don't dance very well. I didn't think you'd like to.
To tell you the truth, I don't like to dance at all.
I don't even like to walk.
Because of the champagne?
No, all the time. Guess it's because I never got anywhere by walking.
Were you ever in Paris?
Mm-hmm, yeah. 1934 and again in 1937.
What month in 1937?
September. Part of October.
I was there in October and November of that year.
Aye, we were there almost the same time. Were you married?
Engaged. Mother sent me to Paris, hoping I would, well, find someone else, she said.
I wish I'd stayed through November.
Are you still in love with me? Is it the champagne?
Yes. Partly, at least.
If you don't ever see me again, will you be very unhappy?
Very.
I'm so pleased. Please don't get up. Bye.
Goodbye.
And there you have a sampling of Saroyan, one scene from many played by Joan Alexander as M.L. and Bill Griffiths as Joe. Now, what do you think of it, Wally Butterworth?
I still think it's a very dull proposition.
As played here as well as every place else, I gather.
No, don't misunderstand me. I have nothing whatsoever to criticize about the individual performances. I thought Jimmy Cagney, these two artists here, of course, fine. Jimmy Cagney did a fine piece of work. So did his sister. Bill Bendix is always good. He's a favorite of mine. And individually, you can't criticize a performance. But after all, a comedian is just as good as his jokes. He didn't have any material.
Well, Mr. Winning, would you like to take issue once more with that point of view?
Well, I think this particular scene was a rather unfortunate one to choose because lacking the atmospheric buildup that the play gives it, it doesn't mean nearly as much to the audience outside or here as it would have if they had seen Nick's place and known what the people were like in it and believed in them more.
I grant that.
Well, now do you believe that you have to see this? After all, you got a good deal of the atmosphere from the piano, from the sounds of San Francisco coming through. How do you feel about this aspect of it, Mr. Lazarus?
I think this scene that you've just heard here is an eminently good one to show. After all, in this scene, I think Mr. Gaston will bear me out. In this scene, probably the principal message, if there is a message in Saroyan, the principal message of the play is enunciated. That is, in the part where Joe says he has tried to live his life for 3 years without trying to hurt anybody. I think Saroyan, all through the play, is trying to show how little people can live a life that bears no harm and brings no harm to any other person.
But that would seem to involve sitting in a saloon and drinking champagne all the time, and that if you move off the chair in that saloon and away from the champagne, you're apt to collide with someone and hurt them.
Mr. McCaffrey, is that bad?
I'm not sure that it's bad, but I wonder how...
Well, I should like to disagree very violently. In the first place, our hero, Joe, does a great deal more than merely sip beer. He saves...
Yes, he sips champagne. That's a good deal more than beer.
But he also happens to save... A very unhappy woman, of questionable reputation, but of magnificent dreams. He also takes care of one of life's shorn lambs in the form of his friend Tom. He defends the heroine against a representative of evil and perversity. Therefore, it seems to me that Joe's kindness, shall we say, or goodness, is active and takes form in dramatic action.
Well, now, Mr. Butterworth, are you willing to align yourself against saving young women of questionable reputation and preserving shorn lambs?
Not at all, not at all. I agree with it that the guy was a pretty good guy, although he was a queer duck.
Yes, that might describe a good many of us, however.
The whole thing is the sequence of these things as it is projected in this performance. That's all. It makes no sense. There's no tying the two things together. No one thing has any bearing upon the other. I saw a walking death character named the Arab go through there, and the only line he had in the play is, what not, no foundation, all the way down the line.
That's all you had to know about that character.
Well, I finally found out he was talking about the world and its problems. No foundation all the way down the line, but I thought for a minute the guy was talking about Gypsy Rose Lee or Kitty Duvall, the character in there whose reputation was questionable. But no foundation all the way down the line.
Well, to be serious about it for a moment, Mr. Butterworth, it seems to me that your most important point of criticism concerns the structure of the play and the film. You feel that it is diffuse and disorganized. Am I right, Mr. Butterworth?
There's no question about it being disorganized. I mean, so far as I, as a film viewer, was concerned, I had to exert my mental processes too darn much to enjoy that movie. And when I pay dough to go to a movie, I want to sit there and laugh and be entertained and relax.
Mr. Lazarus.
May I take a short hack at Mr. Butterworth?
Sure. It's going to be a deep chopper, if you ask me.
I wonder whether Mr. Butterworth's criticisms are not perfectly exemplified by the Arab's line of no foundations all the way down the line. After all, I see no reason why on the stage or on the screen we must always rely on the boy-meets-girl formula. Here, exemplified by The Time of Your Life, is a complete deviation from that rule. Here is a great and exciting talent, I believe, William Saroyan. I think Saroyan has written a great deal of fine and exciting and almost triumphant material. I think he's written an awful lot of nonsense. I think when he learns how to edit, he'll be a much greater author. But in this case, he has broken the rules of the drama. In this case, he has drifted away from the set boy-meets-girl formula. And the very fact that there is no plot by the usual interpretation of the word does not mean it's a bad play. After all, he is showing people living. He is showing people coming into a bar room, some of them drinking too much, some of them not drinking enough. But they're all people, and you can sit in a bar room in a lot of places in a lot of cities.
Well, he's following up in the surrealistic tag, which is connected with him.
But you know what happens to each one of those characters by the end of the play. They're all resolved.
Besides, they create a world, you see. The barroom has not been selected without reason. It is a kind of microcosm. And the various people in the barroom express their frustrations and their longings and their aspirations. They represent a world and a society.
I wonder if that society is very much related to the kind of society that any of us is apt to live in, even in fantasy life, because I get so terribly confused with Mr. Saroyan's rhetoric. Such lines as the line here in this little section we chose. She said, "You're famous," and Joe says, "Very. Utterly unknown, but very famous." Now, this is a kind of literary pretentiousness, which Mr. Saroyan is almost always guilty of.
Is it
of giving us a completely nonsensical line and making it sound as if it meant something.
Why is it nonsensical? What he really means is that he is famous because he is a member of the humanity. That it is humanity that is much more famous. That is the anonymous man who is the real hero.
Well, now look, Mr. Gaffney, do I have to go to this play with your footnotes to it? to make me understand such lines as that?
Well, I don't know. We ran that play for an awful long time at the Theater Guild, and people understood it.
Well,
perhaps
you equipped the playbill with your footnotes, then, Mr. Butterworth.
The play is full of double talk, that's all there is. You can just tag it in just one thing. It's nothing more than double talk.
Well, you can speak double talk without understanding it, you know.
But it takes...
Some of it makes emotional sense rather than factual sense. And what do you need to have entertainment? I mean, what should these people have done?
You speak of
literary pretension. I only went to see the movie. Now, let's get this straight.
I'll get in.
Mr. Lazarus.
You speak of literary pretensions in his writing. I'm thinking of a boy named Noel Coward, who has a pretty good reputation around the theater. And when anyone is burlesquing or paraphrasing Coward, they always give it the same dialogue. One character says, "You mean?" And the other one says, "Precisely." Now, that's a little pretense, too, don't you think?
I think probably it is, but you're speaking of the parodies, not of Mr. Coward.
But he also does it straight.
Oh, all right. Well, wouldn't you prefer someone, if they were going to be pretentious, that they were pretentious and clear, rather than pretentious and unclear? At least I can put my finger on his pretentiousness a little more easily if I can understand what he's saying.
Well, how many of those lines aren't pretentious? What about these lines? "I've got a Christian conscience in a world that's got no conscience at all. The world's trying to get some sort of a social conscience, but it's having a devil of a time trying to do that."
Well, I certainly have never heard a statement which I considered less and more profound, Mr. Gaster.
No,
that sort of thing has been said
profound.
Very often before in just the same terms. And why should Mr. Saroyan take such credit for having come to a conclusion which almost every great thinker in the Western world came to long ago?
Well, it isn't being offered to you for any kind of profundity. It is being offered to you by a character who is trying to explain himself and explain his kindness to his friend, that's all. All I'm trying to say is that most of those lines are perfectly straight, so straight that you consider them commonplace. Now, you can't have it both ways, you know. If the lines are subtle, they become nonsensical, so far as you people are concerned.
Those lines...
If they are sensible and straightforward, you've called them platitudinous.
Those lines can't be straight, or there wouldn't be any argument here about them. If everybody understood them, then they
were
just
plain
ordinary common horse sense English that was either comedy or humor or any of the basic fundamental things we feel in life, there'd be no argument or discussion about
this. Well, maybe we ought to allow Mr. Saroyan the luxury of a few lines people don't understand as long as they get the drift of the scene.
He's got a barrel of double talk in there, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think the point of the scene was missed by anyone.
The point of this last scene?
Point of this scene or any other in this play?
Well, or just take this scene, for instance. The point of this scene eluded me almost completely. I thought that there was kind of a charming little business going on between the two. I thought the young woman in the movie was quite attractive and that she and Mr. Cagney looked like something might be developing there. Just what, I wasn't sure. And I was at times afraid to contemplate. But then nothing came of it at all.
That's exactly right, John.
And I don't know what this did for anybody at all. She was pleased that this man, Mr. Lazarus,
My pal. Thank you. I'm coming
well, Mr.
back
Gaston,
on your
you
problem.
You want to ask that, then I'll take it.
Mr. Gaston?
Well, I should say that the object of that scene, which, of course, is not really completed by the rendition you had here today, is to establish Joe's capacity for discovering hidden weaknesses and hidden longings in characters who are presumably well protected by their surface manifestations.
Let's leave that scene. What is the objective of the entire play? What
easy,
does it
easy,
depict?
Easy, Mr. Butterworth. The title explains it. In the time of your life, live. So that in that good time, there shall be no ugliness or death for yourself or for any life your life touches.
Is that a part
discover
of the play?
Discover in
is
all
that a part
things
of the play?
That
Pardon
which
me.
Shines and is beyond corruption. That describes precisely the behavior of Joe toward virtually every character in the play.
I suppose, Mr. Gaston, that what I resent is Mr. William Saroyan's version of the Sermon on the Mount. I prefer its classic form. You don't mind.
Well, we all do, but who practices it?
Well,
who's he seated on the stage until Mr. Saroyan puts it on the stage?
Mr. Lazarus?
Well, I don't find Mr. Saroyan doing much more in his way than say, someone like Walt Whitman did in his way and in his time. I think Mr.
Less so, in fact.
Less so than you would say that Mr. Saroyan's talent exceeded that of Walt Whitman, Mr. Gaston?
Not at all. Far from it. But there's less preachment in the time of your life than there is in Leaves of Grass.
But he is simply following out the surrealistic idea, which is connected with all of his writings.
Oh, where I think it's eminently realistic.
These images in an order and a form which has no connection whatsoever.
Now, why do you call this surrealistic?
I think it is, unquestionably.
Both the play and the film were filmed very realistically. All these characters are recognizable, even if they are a bit odd.
This thing
oddity does not destroy reality.
Well, just to illustrate, Mr. Gassner, the pretentiousness that I spoke about before, this vast erection on the face of something very simple, you said that this scene that we had here was to point out Joe's great ability to find hidden weaknesses in superficially well-adjusted people who come into bars. Well, now, I assure you, Mr. Gassner, that you could go to almost any neighborhood bar in New York and sit there for 2 or 3 hours, and people who came in during the first 15 minutes and looked very well-adjusted and very well-dressed would, at the end of about three hours, giving you their hidden weaknesses. I mean, that is not very difficult to find out in a bar.
It takes place in 5 minutes, or less than 5 minutes.
Well, I presume that was telescoping the action of the play.
Mr. Saroyan has been accused of verbosity. Now, look here, he's doing it much faster than any of your characters.
Well, Joe is a fast worker.
Well, yes, but who's the genius? Does this take a particular genius, is my point.
No. I should say that it doesn't require any great genius to have written that scene, but it does require considerable talent to have written the play as a whole. I think that I should have preferred greater definition in the motion picture. And if I don't find it, I must blame Hollywood's censorship and Hollywood's uncertain dramaturgy for it, not Mr. Saroyan.
Well, now,
Mr. Saroyan himself is no great Shakespeare as a dramatist. That is true. He's more of a poet in the theater than a constructor, but the film does suffer a bit, and I agree with Mr. Butterworth that it does, because it does not define Joe and Blick and Kitty DeVal too clearly and definitely.
I think it is admirably described by the Arab. No foundation all the way down the line.
Well, now, Mr. Lazarus,
well, that's quite true. There is no foundation in these characters, and that's just the point.
I mean the play. The play, the whole works, the movie, that's the description.
Mr. McCaffrey, Mr. Gassner just climbed over the fence into my backyard. Can I throw him out?
Yes.
He's criticizing the film version of the play. Actually, and the Cagneys went to great lengths to make this point, actually there has been surprisingly little change. The Theatre Guild board, Lawrence Langner, Teresa Helburn, and others, viewed the picture and were delighted with it. Is time running out on us?
Well, I would like to know what changes in the dramaturgy bothered Mr. Gassner.
Well, in the first place, I'd like to know more about Joe as a man who has some burden of guilt.
Well, I think that the only person who can really find out about Joe, Mr. Gassner, is the members of our radio audience who should go to see The Time of Your Life to find out what all this commotion has been about here and to find out how they feel about Joe as a person, about William Saroyan's attitude toward the world, and certainly at least to see James Barton's magnificent performance in another scene which we did not present for you. And now, I'm sorry, gentlemen, the time's up on The Time of Your Life. And here's Bob Sherry with a preview of what lies ahead on The Author Meets the Critics.
Next week's guest on The Author Meets the Critics is one of the most distinguished diplomats of our time, former Undersecretary of State Sumner Wells. Under President Roosevelt, Sumner Wells shaped the good neighbor policy for Latin America, helped map the moves against Nazism, and attended Roosevelt's historic meeting at sea with Churchill in 1941. Mr. Wells is the author of a new book. Its title, We Need Not Fail. Its theme, this is the hour when the fate of Western civilization is at stake. This is the American hour of destiny. The subject is Palestine. The critics, I.R. Khalidi, member of the Executive Committee of the Institute for Arab American Affairs, and Bartley Crum, publisher of the New York Star and former member of the Anglo-American Committee of Inquiry on Palestine. Be sure to join us next week to hear Sumner Wells meet his critics. And now back to John McCaffrey.
Before closing, I'd like to thank Paul Lazarus, John Gassner, Tom Wedding, and Wally Butterworth for coming here today to discuss The Time of Your Life. This is John McCaffrey saying good afternoon for The Author Meets the Critics.
The Author Meets the Critics is produced by Martin Stone, directed by Arthur Austin. This is Bob Sherry speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.